Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio for June 12, 2021. Almost through the dark ages here. I've had my double shots. I hope you have as well, or are getting them. Borders are going to be opening. People are going to start to travel. The wineries are going to be crazy busy. So please listen to the ads that we play for you, because they're trying to explain how they're going to do things, or go to the websites that we give you. All the details can be found at mulliganstew.ca, where Tasting Room Radio has its home. The two stories we're going to deal with, one is a return to Birch Block in Culloden, Birch Block Winery, with Sarah and Murray Bancroft. This is the third block party that we've had with them, because we wanted to see, they were just starting from scratch. Two wild and crazy Canadian kids in Paris having a dream about, finding a vineyard and making wine in the Okanagan. And they are making wine. Fabulous rosé. Absolutely fabulous. And a pop-up piquette. It's a rosé for the people. It's after the rosé is made, they take the skins and stick them back in the vat and add water and a little honey and a little bit of alcohol, and boom, there's a sort of a lighter 8% rosé in a can. And so we're going to talk about their life experiences. And we're also going to help celebrate this day, June the 12th. It's International Rosé Day. Yep, it's Rosé's Day. The second half of the show is about a crisis in the culinary hospitality industry. It started with a post on Instagram by executive chef Jeff Van Geest at Miradoro Restaurant at Tin Horn Creek on the Golden Mile. And he said, I need a miracle. I can't find staff. I can't open. I can't maintain the standards that we have if I can't find people to work in my kitchen. And he said, there's two problems, that and the fact that kitchens have a history of having a toxic work environment handed down from generation to generation, where head chefs yell at the staff and berate them like it's some sort of God-given right. It's going away, but not fast enough. And why would people come back to that environment? So we'll talk about that with Jeff Van Geest. And we'll also talk about the same thing going on in San Francisco and the Bay Area and Napa, Sonoma, with Liam Makelam from KCBS and the foodie chap in San Francisco. Great guy. So that's the show. You ready? Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. They are delighted to let you know that their Osoyoos East Bench Tasting Room is now open daily for tastings and sales. Guided wine tasting from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They offer a private winemaker tour and tasting. And of course, they offer sales and complimentary shipping with orders of 12 bottles or more. We welcome back Beta and Chris Tolley and the entire smuggling team at Mooncursor. All the details at mooncursor.com. And welcome to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. And it is International Rosé Day. And of course, for some of us, every day is Rosé Day. It's as simple as that. And it doesn't, it's not seasonal. It doesn't go from spring to fall. It goes spring to fall to winter to Christmas to New Year's and on into January and February to get you to the next spring and fall. That's how we feel about rosé in the Mulligan household. And I have for block party number three, Sarah and Murray Bancroft of Birch Block Vineyards in Culloden have joined me. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Great to be back.
Sarah, you were saying that that we last talked when the helicopters were flying over in the forest fires, right?
That's right. It was the Mount Christie fire last summer, which was right across, like we had front row seats from our vineyard across the lake, thank goodness. And it was just dramatic and devastating. And it was in a national park, so there weren't so many people threatened or properties threatened other than Painted Rock, which luckily was saved. But, you know, it's so interesting how things come full circle. We were approached by a firefighter pilot this summer who was actually fighting that blaze and asked if he could rent our vineyard guest house for the summer, because it's difficult. You know, we know it's so difficult for people to find accommodation in the Okanagan. It's difficult for people to find workers because the workers can't find accommodation. So we put our minds together for about 30 seconds and said yes. So the firefighting pilot is now living in our vineyard guest house for the whole summer.
Does he expect to be busy?
Well, we talked to him a few times.
Been off to a slow start, which is great, but he's come up from Vancouver Island and he is in his last year before retirement, so he wanted to be somewhere nice and somewhere he can come back and relax, and organic vineyard's a pretty good place to do that. So
Hopefully there'll be lots of relaxing this summer.
Yeah, we're hoping for not a lot of forest fire surprises this year. Maybe it's off to a good start. It was a very, very dry start and they've had some rain now, so we'll see. Fingers crossed.
So, I mean, this is a quick question, but it's an all-encompassing question. How was that year? How was your 2020? Put it in words for me.
Oof. Rosé, International Rosé Day couldn't come soon enough. But, we were, again, I think we said this before, we felt pretty fortunate with everything going on in the world. It's hard to complain too much. It was quite a good year for us. A lot of time spent in the vineyard, getting to know the vineyard very well, and had its ups and downs, but overall was actually a fairly good year for us. We feel quite lucky about that.
I think everyone's yields were down anywhere from 10%, 15%, 20% because of some rain that we had in the early spring around bud break, and I think that's going to happen again this year, but in this year it was actually a hailstorm that happened, so that's always something, that curveball that Mother Nature throws at you, but you do what you can.
That's farming for you. Overall, so the yields were down a little bit this year, but really happy with the wines that we made and other Okanagan Valley wines we've tried as well, so I think the quality was very, very good, with yields down a little bit.
Okay, basic question, guys. What you thought it would be like and what it was like that first year, how did that work out?
Just in terms of the whole experience?
The experience,
farming,
yes.
Winemaking and selling wine. I think from the very beginning we were in for a surprise of, it's a different type of project than I've ever done before in my life. You have to get your head around that there's not a beginning, middle, and end. You're not totally in control. Mother Nature is, and other factors that you can't really control. So,
like the government.
Mother Nature and the government. Good thing she doesn't work for the government, and that would really be tough. But so the things you can't control, but you realize that we've been lucky to surround ourselves with some really good, talented people, learn as much as we can along the way. I've never really been afraid of hard work, especially if it's something that I love to do. So, it's been more work than we thought, but I would say probably more reward than we thought too, a lot of the time. So it's been great.
And although we're very romantic, the two of us, we weren't caught up in the romance of it. So we realized we were operating a business, it's a farm, first and foremost. So all of the extra benefits of, meeting super interesting people and being inspired and getting to work in nature is actually probably one of the hugest benefits that we never thought about before.
At the end of the day, too, we added some new SKUs this year, so that was a little bit more work, but also very fun for me, being part of the team to help design labels and how we're going to package it, and it was always fun. So we were kind of good with the lower yields this year because adding the new SKUs and everything else going on in the world, it's a good year to not have that burden of trying to sell more wine than you have customers for when you're a young, growing brand like we are. So we're still in that nice spot where we had some fun with some new SKUs and not really a problem selling the wine that we're making still at this point, so...
Yeah, Marie likes to say we're no longer a one SKU Sue. we just had our rosé.
That's pretty cool.
For now.
By the way, Marie and Sarah Bancroft from Birch Block Vineyard in Culloden. I hold in my hand a wonderfully empty bottle of Birch Block Vineyard Pinot Noir Rosé. We call this rosé Endless Summer to enjoy all year long. I love the idea. I love the concept. Did it turn out? I know that you can plan and say, this is what we want. This is the color we want, the taste we want, whatever. How difficult was it to hit that spot exactly and say, we did it?
You know, I don't know. There's all the technical side and everything, but to me, like a lot of winemaking, fermentation, cooking, it's just, there's a kind of magic that happens at some point, and you have, you know, I think if you have a clear, focused idea of what you want to do, it's amazing how much it happens. Like every wine that I've made so far is I'm like, this is my favorite wine. This is what I want to drink. This is the style. So it kind of seems to follow you, and you need a bit of luck along the way. But yeah, it's the exact wine that we wanted to make. And I think even this year was really special because the first vintage we've made that it's 100% of the grapes are coming from our Birchblock vineyard, both for the still and sparkling rosé we did.
Right.
And I think that it kind of makes it more rewarding, I guess, but it also has its own unique character. Like we've started to be able to work with different Pinots and with other people that are making Pinot and try their Pinots. And if you're making a single vineyard Pinot, it has its own real character that shows through. And then this year, on top of that, we were able to do a wild fermentation, spontaneous fermentation, so no commercial yeast, and unfined, unfiltered. So I think it really gives it like a brightness and an energy and a character of really all the work that we do in the vineyard and what that vineyard can produce in terms of Pinot Noir and its expression. It sounds a bit dorky, but it really is true. It's great in the glass.
That's not the word that came to mind. I was thinking geeky, but it's very good. It's,
and geeky, dorky,
rightly,
yeah,
no, rightly so.
We call Murray the cork dork sometimes.
Listen, how many cases did you make?
We did spread out over four SKUs. We made sort of probably around 350 cases this year.
In the last interview, you promised to make more.
Well, we made 3,000 cans of Piquette as well.
So yes. Okay. All right. Fine. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and plus we were committed this year to use our own grapes, and you know.
Our vineyard's still sort of producing double now at this point, year after year.
Yeah.
So it's...
we're like fourth leaf now?
We're waiting for it.
How many magnums did you create?
Well, we're excited. So other than the two new... the three new SKUs, we did sparkling rosé, we did the Piquette in cans, and we did our first red this year, and we did a pretty small amount of that. So we decided to put it all in magnums, which we love, and it... I think it's great for aging too. So we have, what did we do? We did 270, 280 magnums, which is a 1.5 liter bottle of red that we're absolutely thrilled with it and want to release it to the world. But we thought it's special enough that we're going to keep it in bottle for a year and release it after it's had some age, because I know most people buy it and have good intentions to age it a bit, but it usually gets consumed pretty quickly.
If you're anything like us.
Yeah.
We thought we might as well put the work in and age it for people for a year, and then they can do whatever they want with it.
Murray, is that your Pinot Noir?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Because I see that you're doing an El Fresco dining August 20. In the courtyard on Joy Road Catering, they've come down off the hill and onto Main Street in Penticton, and you're pouring the first ever Pinot Noir Mag, and you're also pouring the pop-up Shard. Where'd you get the Shard?
That's right, yeah. So in homage to Wildebeest Restaurant, which has now crossed its finish line, this was a really special collaboration that we did, and some really amazing grapes that are from Caledon as well, because we don't grow Chardonnay. So this is literally the last case of it in existence that we'll be pouring at that dinner on August 20th.
Okay.
So we thought we'd sort of celebrate with that and then pour the red, even though we'll be still aging it before we release it, but we thought we'd give a sneak peek and thrilled to be doing a dinner with those guys. They do an amazing job, and they've got super exciting projects in Penticton lined up to build a bakery and a commissary kitchen for their catering and an inn. And they're in kind of a pop-up location this year with a beautiful courtyard. So they're doing a few different dinner series, and we're thrilled to be one of them to do that in August.
Wonderful.
Can't wait.
And today, I love the fact that today, June the 12th, you're doing the UBC Alumni Rosé Wine Tasting on International Rosé Day. And there's three other wines being poured. Perhaps you can fill us in on that. But it's with UBC grads who know their wines, and they're raising funds for UBC students. So you're pouring the rosé, obviously. Who else is joining you in this effort today?
Well, we're pretty thrilled to be in such companies, some of our favorites. So we're with Poplar Grove, and we have Cedar Creek and Okanagan Crush Pad. So,
nice.
Yeah, pretty amazing company, and should be a lot of fun. Both of us went to UBC and met.
We met at UBC.
Woo!
Yeah.
One steamy evening at the Political Science Honors Reading Room.
So last year, or if I remember correctly, Sebastian Legoff picked up all the magnums for the rosé.
So that was great. I've always really appreciated his point of view and his palate. So we've
and he was actually one of the people that said, he said, "I've been thinking about your wine all night." He got back to us again the next day and said, I think it's wonderful, but I also think that you should maybe try bottle aging it a year more, and it will be even more spectacular." So that was our instinct, but it was confirmed.
The great Legoff. Okay, we're talking to our good friends Sarah and Murray Bancroft from Birch Block Vineyard in Culloden, and we'll be back, because when we come back, we're going to talk about rosé again, except Piquette. It's rosé for the people. It's in a can, and you'll understand when we tell you the story behind it. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. They are delighted to let you know that their Osoyoos East Bench Tasting Room is now open daily for tastings and sales. Guided wine tasting from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. They offer a private winemaker tour and tasting. And of course, they offer sales and complimentary shipping with orders of 12 bottles or more. We welcome back Beta and Chris Tolley and the entire smuggling team at Mooncursor. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And you'll be happy to know that music has started on the deck, weather permitting. All the details at EnricoWinery.com. It's International Rosé Day. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. And we have rosé farmers from Culloden on the phone. From Birch Block, Sarah and Murray Bancroft. And they have released this Endless Summer Pinot Noir Rosé. This absolutely gorgeous. Even empty, the bottle tells you to go find another. I love that. And what have you poured for yourself there?
We just poured that very wine in our glasses right now. 2020 Pinot Noir Rosé.
You're not one of those room temperature people, are you? Can you chill it?
Heavens no. I have a couple ice cubes. It's hot out. I just got out of a hot car, so we're...
Yeah, in France they call it à la piscine, which means like poolside, and it means to put ice in your glass of rosé, and it's totally acceptable.
Yes, yes.
I like rosé cold. I like, the biggest thing for me is I often have red, like if we're drinking Pinot Noir and it's red wine and it's kind of warm, that doesn't do it for me.
No.
That's the biggest thing for me is I like my red at sort of cellar temperature.
We're going to cover a couple of subjects in this next segment. We're going to start with Piquette. But more importantly, before we get to Piquette, which is in a can, have you tried any of the rosés in the Okanagan? I think there's 8 or 9 different wineries are doing rosé. Well, actually, they're doing wine in cans, summer cans. But the one that caught our eye was Joie and their rosé in that small, delicate can. Have you tried them?
We have not. I definitely will this summer for sure. We haven't had an opportunity at this point. I think they just came out with them this year today, or
No, it was last
maybe
year.
last year.
Yeah,
Last
but
year.
they sell out so fast. That's the problem. It's
Yep.
like, can you get your hands on it?
That's
And
right.
it's the same with our Piquette. So we did a like a larger can that's sort of like the size of a craft, like what you would expect for a craft beer. So and yeah, it's just we released them on Vancouver Island yesterday, and they sold 5 flats of 24 in one day. So I think it's going to be a Piquette kind of a summer.
Wow. Now, Piquette, as you supplied to us, and I understood this from talking to previous winemakers, it's for the people. It was for the workers. Explain, if you would, Murray, in the cellar or in the crush pad, how this comes about.
So it has its roots in Europe and mostly in France. A long time ago, when they would after you press the reds, you wind up with the pumice with all the dried, all the liquids gone. But there's skins and there's stems and there's seeds. Normally, that gets composted into the vineyard. But with Piquette, they would take it, add some water, usually add sometimes a bit more wine just to bring the alcohol up a bit to protect it. And then sometimes sugar or honey or something to kind of re-ferment it, make it a bit spritzy, and put in a bottle. So it'd be a kind of a refreshing work drink for the vineyard workers. And when it's hot and it's lower alcohol, so they're still going to work the rest of the day and not go lie underneath a tree or in a row of vines. So it kind of we saw. Started seeing it pop up in California in the States a few years ago. I made a couple really small batches in my basement non-commercially just to try it out and see. And then we made it this year, and with everything going into cans, thought it'd be a great opportunity to put it in a can. People can take it on, well, probably not on your boat, but take it to the park or on a hike or and it's lower alcohol, and it is really refreshing. It's basically a process that happens. That the you get sort of a sour kind of acidity happening that's kind of refreshing, and you get a little whiff of watermelon, or in this case, I think with ours, I get a lot of sour cherries and light, and it's just so it's I find it a refreshing thing, and it's kind of for the people because that was the origins, and then it's still now, more affordable. It's more affordable than wine, and it's kind of packaged in a different way. It's supposed to be fun, and for me, that always goes step in step. Like there's times to be sit down and dork out over a glass of wine, and it's really cerebral, and you want to talk about everything that's going on. And sometimes you just want something pretty delicious, refreshing, crushable, and you don't need to sit around and have like a Zoom call over it.
Yeah, it's kind of a picnic wine,
It
right?
is that. It's shareable, and your size is shareable.
It is
Yeah,
meant for two.
the smaller cans are not shareable. Nobody's going to pass off their small can of wine of rosé.
No, that
And
would be.
you made this from Mourvèdre and Grenache?
Yes. Yeah,
Wonderful.
we've done one from Mourvèdre and Grenache, one from Syrah and Viognier skin. And so there's that kind of great component where you're getting another sort of harvest without having another harvest of grapes that need to be watered and all that sort of stuff. You're getting another use out of the
It's
grapes that you've already used.
you're right. It's rosé again.
Yeah.
Rosé
Yeah.
again. And it's $10 a tin, Sarah?
Yeah, that's right. We haven't sold it off our website yet, mostly just at retail, but yeah, lots of the independent liquor stores have it. So
Retail
it's
for
almost
about
like
a
a
buck.
half a liter, really, so
Yeah, it's
Gee,
like three quarters of a bottle in.
if only you could brew a can of pop-up Chardonnay. Oh, I'm sorry. I bit my tongue. I'm sorry about that.
We love Chardonnay too, Terry. We do. We just don't grow it,
Okay,
and it's hard
so
to find.
what else is coming? Let's just tease for the rest of the year. What's coming?
So we've got a little bit of Piquette left, a tiny little bit of our 2020 Pinot Noir Rosé, but that's probably both going to be going quick. And then we'll hold on to the magnums of Pinot Noir, like we said, and probably do a release in fall of 2022.
But here's the funny, interesting thing that we're doing while Murray's doing. So So we were contacted by an assisted living facility in Vancouver who were very interested in our rosé, and the wellness director of this facility approached Murray about doing a virtual wine tasting with their residents. And our first question was like, how old do I have to be to get into this place?
And the answer,
I've already put down a deposit for Sarah and I for a few years down the road.
Man, that's fantastic.
And they're isn't that great?
And they're gonna do the virtual tasting, and then they're gonna go to the roof and have a barbecue?
Roof deck, and like the chef preparing.
The chef is pairing everything with the rosé. It's all very stylish.
One more thing, and it's going to lead to the next two interviews I'm going to do, one with Chef Jeff Van Geest at Miradoro, and my friend Liam Makelam in San Francisco, and it's about the as happy as we are that the restaurants are starting to reopen and go back to square one. Jeff Van Geest posted today, Murray, as you know. And you just quoted me back to the opening line, which is, I need a miracle. It's an extremely busy room that he's overseeing as executive chef. And he can't find personnel, qualified people, passionate people to go in and experience that with him this summer. What are your thoughts on we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the toxic environment in some of the kitchens. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Well, as someone who used to be in kitchens myself, I mean, it's a challenging space in the best of times, but I think my hearts go out to a lot of people in that industry. They've obviously had massive challenges, and now that things are opening up, they're ongoing. I know a lot of chefs too that were concerned during the shutdowns and lockdowns and either not operating or operating on a small scale or with patios or takeout. They were worried, telling me, I don't know how we're going to, when things reopen, because it's not just the challenge of then restaffing, but even for themselves, because it's almost like being a professional athlete in the kitchen. Like, you're operating at such a high level pace that, people couldn't even really imagine what a high level you're operating in a busy, successful kitchen, to just kind of go from standing around waiting to doing that. It is really tough. It takes a while. So I think it's very complex. I think there's a whole number of reasons why they're having a hard time getting people to come back, but I certainly hope they can, because I think everyone loves and is looking forward to going and that conviviality at the table at a delicious restaurant with great food. I love Jeff. He's always done such a great job, and we support his restaurant. We support him when he was down in Vancouver. We support him up there. I reached out to him right away in support, and I think he kind of said it a bit out of necessity and frustration, but also realized that it's not only him. So he did say that he kind of was saying that for everybody in the industry, it's a problem for sure, and it's a challenge coming on the back of a lot of other challenges that they've already been faced. So
thank you you guys for doing this, and thank you for sharing your International Rosé Day. Have a great tasting at UBC, and I hope you sell out. And frankly, we'll continue this story, if it's okay with you. Someday it will be a good book or a documentary. Thank you, and thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
From Birch Block Vineyards, Sarah and Murray Bancroft, and this has been the third block party. Go and find the rosé. Go and find the piquette if you can. Attend their events. Go on the website. Sarah, give them the website, please.
Birchblockvineyard.com.
Thank you. Have yourself a wonderful summer and a wonderful International Rosé Day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Terry.
I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris, The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And you'll be happy to know that music has started on the deck, weather permitting. All the details at EnricoWinery.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabetta Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open for spring. Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the Bistro at Hillside Winery is also open, with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the Bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of six or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. And welcome back to Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. The details for this show, any of the shows we've done over the last 14 years, can be found at mulliganstew.ca. You'll also find the Mulligan Stew podcast and Mulligan Stew Radio at CKUA. Jeff Van Geest, Executive Chef Jeff Van Geest, the man running the kitchen at the wonderful Miradoro restaurant, Tinhorn Creek Winery, on the Golden Mile, South Okanagan. He posted midweek on Instagram, and it said, "Help, I need a miracle." And the ensuing conversation with us was about the fact that he was ready to reopen the doors of Miradoro, but could not find help, could not find staff to surround himself in the kitchen with. And it was astonishing because they've never lacked for talent walking through the door. Lots of resumes showed up. Everybody wanted to work there. And all of a sudden, in this pandemic, the entire workforce dried up. And then I realized it wasn't just him, that everybody was having the same problem. And because the second interview we're going to do to finish off the show is with Liam Makelam from KCBS San Francisco and his own show, The Foodie Chap, and Liam's List, the guy's everywhere. And he interviews hundreds of chefs in and around San Francisco and Napa, Sonoma. He says it's the same thing down there, but they're taking a different approach to it. So now it's a real problem. That and the fact that a toxic environment in some kitchens causes people never to come back. They're just not going to do it. And so kitchens have to change as well. It's going to change dining, as a matter of fact. And we're part of that problem and solution. So that's why I thought you'd be interested in this. Let's find Executive Chef Jeff Van Geest in his car on his way to the kitchen. How are you doing, Chef? On a scale of 1 to 10, are you safe? Are you well? How were you in the lockdown, you personally?
Personally, the lockdown's not been terrible for me up until this point. Early on, I had a lot of time to spend riding bikes with my son and gardening and family time and all that. We were able to prioritize that a little bit, but as things pick up here, that's starting to change.
You had time to go fishing as well, I noticed.
A lot of fishing when I can.
Yeah, well, you hold up a fish that says Boss Hog, right? You have my attention.
Now, yeah, you saw that.
You posted something that started with the line, "Friends, I need a miracle." Explain the post, if you will, Chef.
To keep it simple, we can't find any staff for our kitchen. I'm needing to find a way. I need to be in two places at once, 7 days a week at the moment, and that's obviously not possible. So I'm constant ads for cooks, and I'm getting literally zero resumes. I'm getting zero response to those ads. And it's not just me, it's all my peers in the industry as well. It's a serious problem.
You said in the post, you said, "The people I do have are fantastic, but I don't want to crush their spirits. Please help me spread the word. I'm looking for people ready to take the next step and willing to take a chance on the right people." What exactly are you looking for in your kitchen alone?
Well, I mean, over the years, I have had to be creative in my hiring anyways, and I think we've gotten good at that. You know, it used to be that you'd hire the most experienced person who was willing and eager to be there. And now it's more about finding people that maybe want to get into cooking and have done a tiny little bit of it, but they've got the right, a little bit of experience, but they've got the right attitude and the right approach, and you know, they're willing to work hard and they're willing to learn. We can teach these people, and that's what I mean by that. So whether you know maybe they've just worked at McDonald's or something like that, but they've got a passion for cooking and they're not sure how to take the next step. We can guide those people through the next step.
Jeff Van Geest, the executive chef at Miradoro Restaurant at Tin Horn Creek, Golden Mile. Where did everyone go? What happened to your workforce?
That's the million-dollar question. I think people took stock of their lives and priorities and maybe saw this as a less sustainable industry, you know, in terms of the work versus reward side of things. I think that they're seeing it as something that's not necessarily healthy, and that's what we want to work on, and that's the reckoning we're facing right now. We want to make it sustainable and healthy, and that's something we're all facing in this industry at the moment.
Well, I know there's people looking for work, Chef. They may not see themselves as restaurant people, but what kind of skills are you looking for? I mean, you say it's an attitude. What's that attitude?
Yeah, I mean, it's an attitude of, you know, like, you enjoy a fast-paced environment. You have a passion for bringing joy to people, a passion for creating. You know, when I was young, I was going to go to art school, and I always enjoyed working with my hands, creating things and making beautiful things. And I kind of fell into cooking, and I get that same sort of reward from cooking that I would have gotten, you know, from doing fine art or graphic design or something like that. The creativity and the beauty that you create. And so we're looking for people that, you know, love that kind of thing. You know, they love creating, and they love putting beautiful things into the world. And, you know, I mean, we want to create a sustainable environment, but at the same time, yeah, you got to work hard for it, but you have to, you know, there can be joy in that effort as well.
Yeah, let me just pop that balloon for a second, Chef. A.K. Campbell, A.K. Campbell, Chef A.K. Campbell wrote a damn heavy reply. He says, "I feel your pain too, Chef. The days of numbers of hours worked, the fewer hours slept, spent finding joy, the bravado and egos built on killing oneself and one's team for bragging rights are long over. The unreasonable expectations of guests, the cost of living has decimated the workforce, the industry-wide behavior of having a toxic workplace behavior has decimated our workforce. That is one of the things that's shocking to people when they see a working kitchen for the first time. There's a lot of yelling going down. Sometimes things are thrown. It seems to be handed down from generation to generation. Does that have to change?
It has to change, 100%. You know, so when I talk about hard work, I'm talking about hard work for a goal and in an environment that's supportive and sustainable. You know, I had things thrown at me. I had the worst possible insults hurled at me. You know, those days need to be done, and I work with my two chefs on that. I had to learn that. I had to learn to change, and it's 100% the right thing to do. And I work with my two chefs on that too. You know, we were all brought up in a much more military style environment in our training when we were younger cooks. And it's, you know, people talk about, like, in relationships and whatnot, the cycle of abuse. You learn the abuse from being abused. And we need to be the generation of chefs that breaks that cycle. And we need to learn to treat people with respect and dignity in our kitchens. And this is the number one thing that is going to help solve this staffing problem.
Executive Chef Jeff Van Geest, Miradoro Restaurant, great restaurant in the Okanagan at Tin Horn Creek on the Golden Mile. I know that certain unnamed family members eat there all the time, and they're always raving about it. Every time they rub it in because they've been there and I haven't. Listen, what did you think of A.K. Campbell's chef's response? Because it's longer than what I read. But he's basically calling out the industry and saying he'll help any way he can.
Well, I agree with him. You know, I think it is time for a reckoning in our industry.
It's time for a reckoning, and this is only the beginning.
Yeah, this is only the beginning. It's going to get worse before it gets better, and the people that survive this are the people that the restaurants that survive this are the ones that address this situation. You know, we need to start paying a living wage. We need to take care of our staff, and we need to treat our staff with respect and dignity.
Hey, Chef, I'm thinking about Sate in Calgary and Edmonton and the chefs that they turn out.
Yep.
How often does that workforce spill out? Is it once a year, twice a year? And how are those? I mean, I know the training's fantastic. Some of them, when you first meet them, now that they've gone through that Sate training, what's the word I'm looking for? Entitled. There's a whiff of entitlement. I wonder if that's gone away.
I wonder if that's gone away as well. The good schools prepare their students for the reality of the workforce. I think there was a bit of a problem a decade or two ago where kids were being, I'm saying kids, I mean, some of these people were adults that had changed careers, but young cooks, new cooks were being sold this idea of basically coming out of school and, you know, running a kitchen or becoming a Food Network star or something like that. And the reality of the work that needs to be put in, like in any career, was a surprise to them. So in a sense, I think some of those schools failed our industry. But it does seem that that's being addressed now. Now, there are schools out there. I've always had a ton of respect for Northwest Culinary Academy in Vancouver, who I've had a long working relationship with, where they made a point, Chef Tony Minicello there, made a point of always being very clear about the realities of the industry and not selling an illusion to those students.
Okay, I'm going to wrap this up quickly because we can't solve all of these issues in one conversation, but this day of reckoning is coming. I wonder, it can't happen soon enough. More importantly, the response to your post, do you get a sense that maybe you can find some staff?
I hope so. You know, I needed to get some attention, and that's why I put out a more dramatic post than what I would normally do.
All right.
Shake a few trees and see what happens.
Here's the thing, Jeff. There's some people now behind the wheel of their cars. No matter where they happen to be listening, and they're listening to Tasty Room Radio, where do they send those resumes? How do they get in touch?
They can send them to me. My email, chefjeff@miradoro.ca, or via direct message on Instagram, Jeff Bangiest. They can call the restaurant, 250-498-3742. Any way they want, they can mail it to me. They can drop it at the restaurant.
Okay. What's the summer look like? Are you going to be doing the dining in vineyards and things?
Well, we've got indoor dining again, and we've got a lot of space in the restaurant, so we've got some nicely spaced out tables. We expect that once the travel ban lifts that we're going to be very busy.
And I want one final thing here, and I'm going to take a shot at my own audience, and that is there is a role to play for being a guest in a restaurant anywhere, but let's talk in British Columbia. How you comport yourselves, what you expect from the wait staff, what you expect from the kitchen. You don't have to lower your standards, but you have to be kind. You have to be respectful.
Absolutely. You know, when I was talking about respect and dignity, it's the same thing. These people that work in this industry are professionals. You know, some of them it's an entry-level job, like the busser positions, the dishwasher positions, and some of them it's a professional career. This industry is so important to our economy, and it's also so important just in terms of bringing joy to people. And I just want to see our people treated with respect and dignity. I also think people need to realize that they're going to start paying more for food in restaurants. It's been held at a unreasonable level for a long time, and those prices are going to go up.
Okay, Chef, when all this is done, let's go fishing, please. Thank you.
I would love that.
Thank you. As long as you reveal what lake you're on. He is Chef Vangiest, the executive chef at Miradoro Restaurant in the Okanagan at Tin Horn Creek. A fantastic dining experience, whether it's today or tomorrow. Thanks, Jeff, and good luck with that search.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to put all the details of how to contact Jeff Vangiest on our website at mulliganstew.ca. It's the Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Narrabetta Bench. They are very happy to report that their tasting room is open for spring, Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the Bistro at Hillside Winery is also open, with a new menu and a new executive chef, Evan Robertson. Bistro hours, Wednesday to Sunday, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Dinner service, grab-and-go picnic packs, and takeout will be available through the Bistro. Just a reminder that there's Canada-wide complimentary shipping on all online orders of 6 or more bottles. All the fine details can be found at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of 4 wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock, with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. And welcome back. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. It was a tough conversation with the executive chef, Jeff Van Geest from Miradoro at Tinhorn Creek, because basically he says right at the top of his post on Instagram, I need a miracle. And one of the respondents was Chef A.K. Campbell. And he says, I feel your pain. The days and numbers of hours worked, the fewer hours slept, egos built, killing oneself and one's team for bragging rights are long over and should never have existed in the first place. The pandemic has decimated our workforce. And there's more to that, obviously. Really what it is, what it calls up is the toxicity in kitchens with professional chefs, the yelling, the degrading, the dehumanizing of staff by chefs has been handed down literally from generation to generation, from staff to staff to kitchen to kitchen. It's got to stop. And so I thought what I'd do is I'd go to my food guy in San Francisco. He's a great friend. He's been on this show many times. His name is Liam Maklum. He has a show there called, well, he has a number of shows, but this one on KCBS is called Foodie Chap. And he talks constantly to the chefs in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, Napa, Sonoma. I happened to find him in his car driving from Calistoga back to San Francisco. Kind of had him trapped in his car, just like Jeff Van Geest. Liam, listen, I hope you heard my explanation about why this story started, and perhaps you can pick it up from there. What is the situation in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, with the chefs in the restaurants as they reopen?
Yeah. So, Terry, everything you just said, everything that chef communicated, I've heard the same things from dozens of chefs. It's the same song being sung in kitchens, in restaurants, in hotels, not just in North America, but pretty much around the world. But let me tell you, San Francisco, as you know, people come here for the Golden Gate Bridge. They come here to ride a cable car, and they come for the restaurants. Well, guess what? The story in San Francisco right now is we're reopening. It's the big roar back. The roaring 20s are coming. Guess what? We don't have the staff, every chef is saying, to meet the demand. So, two things. First of all, this past year, everything shut down. All those restaurant workers, hospitality workers, for the first time in their lifetime, probably, they had some time off to enjoy with the family. They were able to get out of the pirate ship, which is what a lot of kitchens have been for many years, like working in a pirate ship. That culture has been shifting, which is good, but a lot of people realize, hey, being at home, having time with the family, having time to do normal things, like have a Friday, Saturday night off, perhaps there's another way for me to live, another way to make a living. And so a lot of those people who were steadfast in their commitment to their restaurant, to their chef, to their team, they found, many of them, another way to live, and have found other sources of income. They're not going back to those kitchens. So the restaurants as we know them, that paradigm, Terry, has been blown up. The big crisis is, yes, there's a staff shortage. And two, people have found other industries or other ways to make a living. So I don't know what the answer is. I just know that the song being sung here in San Francisco, it's the same chorus in Vancouver, the same chorus in London, LA, New York, Sydney, Australia, you name it, anywhere in the world, the same crisis is real. So what's the answer? Who knows?
Chef A.K. Campbell also said, the days of the number of hours worked, the fewer hours slept, spent finding joy, the bravado and the egos built on killing oneself and one's team for bragging rights are long over and should never have existed in the first place. This pandemic has decimated our workforce.
Yeah. No, it's true, Terry. And it's a real shame because there's only one person I know who loves this industry more than me, and that's you. And we both have a passion for food, and we love the people who make the food. These are the folks who bring joy to our table on a nightly basis. These are the folks who have been there to serve us and celebrate the biggest triumphs in our lives, weddings, birthdays, anniversaries, you know, just group dinners, you know, with coworkers. It's a real shame that things are not going to look the same, but I am a believer, Terry, every industry has a shake-up, and, you know, the hospitality industry is having a major one right now. Things will fall back into place the way things were. That's in the rearview mirror. And so we have to look forward to a more streamlined kind of service. I know for a lot of the fine dining places, a lot of people don't want to go back to that. Casual dining, you know, or fast casual, that was a trend that had already started. And I think now more than ever, people want to keep it simple. And quite frankly, the restaurants have to keep it simple. So you're going to see a lot of places popping up where they have a salad bar. I hate to use the word buffet, but those kind of places where there's less interaction, you know, with customers, servers, there's going to be a cashier. These little places are starting to pop up in San Francisco. And as I hear about new openings in San Francisco, they are fast casual. So the fine dining spots, the top ones will remain. You'll still have your French Laundry. You'll still have Daniel Hum's place in New York. You know, you'll still have your hot spots in Vancouver. But it's going to be different, Terry. It's going to be different. And it's going to be a long struggle because training people and inspiring people to come into this industry that's been so hard hit is going to be a tough one.
Well, and again, we not to belabor the point, but the toxicity of the actual kitchen, the yep. yelling that's been handed down from executive chef to the line to all of the sous chefs over the years, literally was part of the fabric of being in a kitchen and working at a top line kitchen. It went with it. It was yep. just a given. Who started
Absolutely.
This and how did it end up? This is the pirate ship that Bourdain talked about, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. I think, Terry, it was just a culture that, I mean, began, you know, back in the day, you know, our first sort of famous French, the first famous chefs were the French chefs, like, you know, Paul Bocuse, and everyone who followed. I'm not sure Paul Bocuse was ever a guy who shouted at people, but somehow, somewhere along the line, abuse became the order of the day. And I go back to that reference of the pirate ship. You know, it was a tough place for women to be, tough place for guys, and the language, the abuse, all over a you know, a burnt piece of bacon or a, you know, a potato that was, you know, too buttery. I mean, no one deserves to get shouted at any place, anytime. That is changing because there are laws in place now. People don't want to get sued, and a lot of people got sued in the last 10 years. So thankfully, that part of the culture is changing and across the board. There are still some chefs who think it's okay to shout and be abusive, but for the most part, Terry, I'm happy to say I go in. I spend a lot of time back of the house when I'm doing a story, or even when I'm dining. I always love to just pop by and say thank you to the cooks doing all the hard work, and I see more women in the kitchen. you know, professional kitchen. I see order and quiet in a way I haven't seen in many, many years. So things are changing. That part of the industry is shifting. But the bigger issue, Terry, is the shift to get people back. How do you lure people back?
Yeah.
What's the attraction?
Yeah.
What's the attraction? You know, I don't have the answer, but I wonder, how do you get people back into the industry that pays the least? That's pretty unfair. The hours are insatiable. You know, what is the attraction?
Is that right now, while this crisis is happening, the rest of us, the diner, have been trapped for a year and a half, 2 years. We want to get out. We want to get in restaurants. We want to dine. We want to feel good about ourselves and good and just inhale the smells and the scents of what a great dining experience is like. And they're meeting in the middle, right on the middle of the table.
You are so right, Terry. That's exactly what's happening. And we do all want to get back to that which we know. We also want to get back and walk into a restaurant and see our favorite bartender behind the bar.
Exactly.
And our favorite waiter at our favorite lunch spot. You know, these are all things that we've been gagging to do again. And I've already had a taste of it because things are opening up here big time in California. On Tuesday next week, the 15th, everything opens up. And people can dine in. The al fresco dining experience, the parklets, they are not going away. There's a big vote coming up, and that vote will determine if they stay or go. My vote is, my feeling is that those parklets will remain because they've been so popular, especially here in the Bay Area. Little parklets just bringing life to the neighborhoods that for, you know, the best part of a year look like ghost towns. So the parklets have brought people back. People have loved the experience of eating al fresco. Of course, in San Francisco, we only get 7 warm nights a year. So the al fresco experience can be a little... And I just, you know me, Terry, I'm like you, glass half full, not half empty. So I want to just bring a bit of optimism here. Yes, there are big challenges. But, you know, I mentioned to you earlier, I have a friend, Matthew Dolan, Michelin-starred chef, 25 Lusk. Just over a year ago, he opened up a rooftop to complement his fine dining Michelin-starred restaurant. And that rooftop has saved him because they haven't been able to staff up the fine dining restaurant. It's only open 25 Lusk, 2 nights a week, Friday, Saturday. But the rooftop that serves gourmet pizza, burgers, salads, quick food, there's a line round the block because people are just eager to come in and come eat. So the fast casual thing, it's happening. It's here to stay. It's going to become the thing for a lot of these restaurants and chefs. They're like, how can we pay our staff and just work smarter and work, make more money with doing less? And when I say doing less, that means providing less for the diner. So, you know, you walk up and you grab your slice of pizza. You know, you walk over to the cashier. You know, so that's what's happening, Terry. But I will say this. We still are blessed to have some of the best restaurants in the world in the Bay Area. So at least from here where we are, we still have the bounty to choose from. We have the best produce. We have some of the best weather anywhere in the world. And we still have a lot of talent in our kitchens. So I want to wrap this call up with some optimism. Yes, the crisis exists, but we're going to come back. Everything is going to settle down, and we're going to go back to doing what we love. Slightly different from the way we did it before, but we still have a lot of things to be excited about around food and wine in the Bay Area and beyond.
He is the stunningly optimistic Liam Makelam, the host and producer of Foodie Chap and everything else that moves in San Francisco. Thank you, Liam.
You're a very kind man. Much love, Terry. Thanks, mate.
Liam Makelam, Foodie Chap. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock, with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Hickenbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com.